New and improved Joker products with a new secret ingredient. Smiley.
What is this?
Now, let's go over to our blind taste test.
Love that Joker.
Where's it coming from?
I don't know.
Uh-oh. You don't look happy. He's been using Brand X. With new Joker brand, I get a grin again and again. Oh. That luscious tan, those ruby lips and hair color, so natural, only your Undertaker knows for sure. I know what you're saying. Where can I get these fine new items? Well, that's the gang. Chances are, you bought them already.
Love it, Joker.
So remember, put on a happy face.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Engage.
Dose prescribed by comic book therapy.
The weekly dose roll out.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Weekly Dose. I am Sir Witty Supername. I'll be your host tonight. It's currently week two of Dez's hostage situation with Tyrone, but we won't talk about that. We all wish him well. Later on in the episode, we have an interview with actor Chris Emerson, voice actor from Resident Evil 2. He will be interviewed by Ryan Rodriguez from Comic Book Therapy. All right, with me as always is my sexy co-host, Norwood. How you doing, Norwood?
It puts the lotion on its skin.
All right, that's sweet.
I'll come up with a catchphrase eventually.
Alright, we also have Geek Boy Movie X. How you doing, X?
Hi.
I hate you.
Sweet last ride.
Being...
I have full of energy tonight. It's all good.
We have Cody the Thor Verling. Everyone wants to hear what Cody has to say. What do you have to say, Cody?
Can you say my name one more time?
I was going to say it.
Wolverine.
That's better. I don't think there was an L in there that time.
I think we decided his name was the Doctor from now.
The Doctor.
And of
course, Comic Book Therapy owner, DJ Pedro. How you doing, Pedro?
What's up?
A.K.A. DJ Hot Pants.
Oh, don't be like that. Don't be jealous.
You sound like you're broadcasting from the inside of Optimus Prime. What's going on with you?
I don't know. It should be pitch zero. What's going on? Does it sound regular right now?
No,
or does
no,
it sound
not really.
Off?
It sounds a bit off.
What about now?
No.
Now sounds fine?
It's like you're in a toilet.
Maybe
the toilet store. All right, nothing of those goddamn shenanigans. Those damn shenanigans.
Okay, it says I can't close out the program. Hold on. Seriously, it says cannot close out the program while you're on the call. I'm like, oh,
God damn it, sir. How dare
you? Is it sound fine now?
Oh, God.
Everyone has to put up with you now.
Is it fine now?
Not really.
Witty recommends.
All right. Our first segment tonight is another episode of witty recommends. Alright, this week's spotlight book is Marvels. In this series, the birth of the superhero is witnessed by the Everman, photographer Phil Sheldon. It was written by Kurt Busiek with art by Alex Ross. Busiek and Ross took enormous attention to detail to mirror the events of hundreds of comic book issues to the events from the time period. The series, which was released in 1994, follows the Marvel Universe from 1939 to 1974. Alex Ross took a full year to complete his art, which was all hand-painted. Using his friends and family as reference, Ross brought the comic hero into the real world in ways never done before. His attention to detail of the time period really highlights the street perspective on the modern-day Greek gods fighting in New York. The story brings brand new perspective to what were essentially kids' books from the 40s. An exciting fight between the Golden Age's Human Torch and Namor, for one, has much more weight when seen through the eyes of the mortal man on the street. Who are these modern marvels, and will life ever be the same, is the question of the book. Busiek manages to keep the reader enthralled with the happenings of the Marvel Universe between the panels. Issue 2 is especially powerful when Phil, who loves the Marvels, gets caught up in the fear surrounding the mutant problem, and without thinking, even throws a rock at the X-Men. The obvious draw on this comic is Ross's art, but every fan will be delighted with all the cameos that fly under the radar. A young, unnamed J. Jonah Jameson, who was already a prick in 1939, is squeal-worthy. The only con in this book I can find is its abrupt ending. After meeting Gwen Stacy before her death, Phil finds he can no longer retain an outsider's perspective on things anymore. There's also an element of celebrity to the superhero that runs throughout the series. Tony Stark, for instance, bears a striking resemblance to Brett Butler. And the hero worship of these celebs in the 50s gives way to gossip, accusations, and hate in the 60s. I hear Sue Storm is keeping Namor on the side, for example. Although I'd rather have Tony Stark and Sue Storm than Snooki and porn star Kim Kardashian, Marvel joins the ranks of DC the New Frontier, JSA the Golden Age, and Watchmen in injecting superheroes into history. And I think this book more than matches its peers. The trade paperback edition also includes a Zero issue showing the birth of the Human Torch. It also includes an enthusiastic intro by Stan the Man Lee, a comics reference guide to the events in the story, and pictures and commentary showing Ross's process. Pick it up today. Good night and good luck. Fuck Snooki.
Woody's Roundup.
All right, now we're going to move into Woody's Roundup. Yeehaw!
All right, welcome to Woody's Roundup. Yeehaw. Okay, the first book I want to talk about today is Adventures Serena number 3 by Dennis Hopeless and Kev Walker. I really enjoyed the premise, but it's been done before, you know, in Battle Royale and Hunger Games, but the draw here is that it's the Hunger Games with superheroes. These guys are teenagers, and you can really feel the behavior is teenage behavior. You can feel the desperation and the fear behind the teens as they try to survive, and as they're trying to kill each other or just trying to survive and get away from the other guys. The art is sufficient. Walker draws, it's sufficient enough. It's just that he draws women, like, really ugly. I don't know if he does it because they're teenage girls or whatever, but they're just really ugly. And it's kind of reminds me of, like, Ramada Jr.'s art a little bit. It's just not as crappy. So the background art isn't really detailed at all. He uses silhouettes and, like, just tones, like black and white and gray. He just uses, like, tones and stuff like that, grayscales. And, yeah. The only reason I'm going to keep picking this book up is to see the different ways they can kill each other and who gets killed and who is left standing. The next book I'd like to talk about is X-Men and X-Force, number 3. Now, I know Cody doesn't really like this book, and it took me until the number 3 to realize that this book really sucks. The drama is forced, and the only thing going for is the art. I'd say that Hopeless is doing too much because he can barely do Avengers Arena.
So what you're saying is that he's hopeless.
Exactly. His name, it's all in the name.
Walk, walk.
So,
I had to
so after... after number 3, after 3 issues, I don't recommend picking this book up anymore. Without a doubt, the next book, I'm not even going to say anything about it. I just want you to pick it up. It's Thor, God of Thunder. This book is amazing. The art, the story, it's amazing. It's Jason Aaron and Esad Rybik. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's it. And lastly, I would like to talk about Superior Spider-Man number 1. By Dan Slott and artist Ryan Stegman. I have to say that the art really stands out a little better than Ramos because it's just cleaner. And I have to say a negative here is that they kept Delgado doing the colors, so it's really dark tone. I don't know if they're trying to capture that dark tone that, you know, Peter Parker, Octavius is supposed to have behind it, but I just don't like the coloring too much on this. You guys can chime in if y'all have read it. I'd like y'all to join in because this is a discussion I think we should all join in on.
We hold hands, too?
Huh?
What?
Yeah, let's hold hands. Sing Kumbaya and all that stuff. I just think that the character they established in, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 700 and even Avenging Spider-Man, I think it was 15.0 or 15.1, that character they established isn't the character that is in this number one. It seemed like, you know, he went through that flashback in 700 and he was supposed to feel all these feelings that Peter Parker went through and he's supposed to be a little bit kinder. In this book, they just kind of like he forgot he was supposed to be kind of, you know, nice. He gets in a battle with the Sinister Six and just kind of like gets tired and says, I'm going to leave. And he like just swings away and something makes him go back and save this cop that's about to get killed by a boomerang. But,
Wait, did you say a cop was about to be killed by a boomerang?
Yeah, and he just like instinctively saved the cop. And I was like, okay, you know, that's a little bit like it, but it wasn't his choice. He said, why did I come back for this cop? You know, I wanted to leave. And you know, I just think, you know, the character they had established beforehand, that one, he would have wanted to save the people anyways. He wouldn't have stopped and said, okay, I'm tired. I got punched too many times in the face. I'm going to quit being Spider-Man for today.
Bye-bye.
Exactly. And I was like, that's not the character they established earlier. And the next thing is that he's a douchebag to Mary Jane. And if she doesn't, like, suspect anything by now, after all this time they've spent together and being married and everything, if she don't suspect him, I mean, he's drinking at one point. She's like, oh, you're drinking, you know, I don't like that kind of deal. I'm like, okay, now you still don't suspect anything, Mary Jane? Come on.
Spider-Man, I mean, take a drink? Come on.
It's just that, you know, she knows him better than anybody, and she doesn't figure out that he's...
She's in love.
You know, yeah, and I
are you
the
suggesting
last
that the writing team doesn't know what they're doing?
Oh, dang.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. That's up for you to decide, readers. It's a little bit, you know, humorous in some parts because, you know, he outsmarts the Sinister Six. What he does is he scratches them and he infects them with, like, these little nanobots. So he listens to what they're doing while he's having dinner with Mary Jane on this little, like, earpiece. And he's telling Mary Jane, he's like, yeah, I know where they are. I know what they're planning. So he goes ahead of time. He sets up all these traps. So when they break into the place, he has all these traps to spring on them at once. And that was kind of funny. I was like, okay, he's not Peter Parker, but this is kind of funny here. And then they have this really big reveal at the end because he's punching, I don't know if it's Shocker or it's one of the bad guys. He's punching him in the face over and over, and he's about to kill him, which goes against the character that he has established already, and something stops him. And then you have this big reveal, and spoilers, you cover your ears, kids.
What stops him?
The ghost of Peter Parker.
Yeah,
oh,
the ghost. Good lord. No. Oh, good lord.
And to me, all this, like, animosity I had for this Dan Slott and Flack, it is justified now because this stupid crap like this.
I saw it. It is literally an Obi-Wan Kenobi ghost. Shimmery blue guy standing next to him.
He's like, I'm never going to let Dr. Octopus kill anybody as long as he's kind of deal. And I'm like, ah, man, really? So soon? Really? So soon after the last one? Come on. You teased it and was like a super douchebag to the fans, and then you're going to spring this on us? Yeah, we all knew what was going to happen. But that's the end of Woody's Roundup, and I think it's bullcrap.
It is. It is.
Tell us what you really think about those books.
It's crap. It's crap. Come on, man.
Thank you, Woody.
Today on Artist Spotlight, Christopher Emerson, voice actor of Piers Nivans in Resident Evil 6.
Hi, this is Ryan Rodriguez of comicbooktherapy.com, and today we have a special guest. His name is Christopher Emerson. He recently did some voice acting for Resident Evil 6 as Piers Nivans. For those of you who don't know, Piers Nivans is Chris Redfield's new BSAA BFF partner, and he helps him fight off a bunch of ghoulies, helps him through some troubling times. And overall, is a super cool character. So we're really, really happy to have Mr. Christopher Emerson today, and we're gonna be picking his brain and asking him some questions and stuff. All right, cool. Here we go. So, how'd you first get into voice acting?
I had experiences with voice acting when I was a little kid. I was like 8 years old. Grew up in Reno, Nevada. And I booked this on-camera commercial. It was part of two commercial campaign, where it was for this local science fair. And I was the kid in one on camera, and there was this other kid in the other. My first ever voiceover experience was the production company really disliking the other kid's voice on the spot. And so but they liked mine. And so they asked me to ADR or completely redub all of his lines in the other spot.
Oh, wow. And did you like invite this kid personally to make sure
I never bumped into him ever again, but, it was go time on the playground, like 7. And, the very first time I was ever thrown into a padded booth with a microphone and thick glass and the adults on the other side and me alone to make weird noises. And it was when I was like 7, 8 years old dubbing this kid. And so there were two spots running in Reno that had two different kids, but the same voice coming out of their mouths for some reason. Mm-hmm. But and then years and years later, lots of time goes by, and I was kind of looking for, I was doing on camera stuff, and I was kind of looking for a job when things slowed down, and I was like, well, what else can I do? There was that voiceover thing when I was 8. Yeah. Do adults do that? Can I actually make money at that? Is that a career path that is even possible? And I looked into it, and sure enough, you can. And I cutted my first demo, sent it out. Agencies picked me up, and I started to establish a career.
So are you, like, fresh onto the scene right now, or is this kind of like a process that's been going on for a few years, or where are you at right now?
Oh, for me with that? No, yeah. that was about 8 years ago now, maybe 8 to 10 years ago that I first started to embark on voiceover as a career.
Okay.
And it's been in the past, I would say, sort of, if 8 to 10 years, depending on what it actually is, if I were to think about it, about 6 to 8 of that, depending. It was a couple few years in where I really started to get my legs underneath me, or my voice, so to speak, get it? And where it was actually a career, where it was actually something that I was like, oh, okay, I can do this, I can do this, this can be my thing, and I can focus on it. So that was that.
So how did Capcom scoop you up? Were you just sending out some demos, and then were you just like screaming onto a track a lot? Like, man, that guy has an awesome voice to be spooked out by.
Kind of. The Capcom is crazy secret, right? Mm-hmm. Super infamously tight-lipped about all their projects. And so when I first sent in a sample for what I later come to find out is Resident Evil 6, it had these nondescript sides with disjointed lines that you really couldn't discern who was saying what or what the project really was or the storylines. It was all very, very cloak and dagger, top secret, confidentiality stuff. And so that's when I sent in a sample, and it was what would later be Piers Niven's lines, right here in my booth, actually, right behind this microphone. And I just sent them a sample of some stuff, some intimate stuff between Chris and Piers, and some really screamy stuff, death scenes and all kinds of stuff, right? And I get a call back, and it's not until I get to the call back. It was in a studio down in Marina Del Rey. They escort me, and I still don't know what the project is. Yeah. It's still under this code name, and it's kind of like, I know it's part of something big. I know it's a code name, but I don't know what it is yet. And so they lead me into this room, and it's not until after I sign a bunch of non-disclosure agreement paperwork that I then get, it's kind of like, okay, you've signed everything off. Now sit down, and we're going to tell you about what really is in the hangar at Area 51.
Yeah.
It was this real, like, sit you down. It was Liam O'Brien, who would be my voiceover, the voice director on the game. Mm-hmm. Amazing talent, amazing guy. People in the comic world probably know him as voicing many other things. I think he's voicing some Gollum stuff for something, and just amazing, amazing guy. But he was the guy. He sat me down and said, all right, this is the project. This is why you're here. This is what you're going to be doing. And that was the first time that I knew that it was Resident Evil. And so I laid down stuff. And that was about a week later, I got the phone call saying, you're the guy.
So had you played some of the previous Resident Evil games in the past? Or was this kind of like, oh, I've heard that before?
No, I played the first one back on the Sega Dreamcast. Yeah. And I think I played a little bit of the second one back then. And then I didn't for the longest time. And then when I booked the job, I immediately got a copy of Res 5 and played all the way through RE5 before we even began sessions on RE6.
So did you just kind of study a lot of sessions with Roger Craig Smith? Because he's your buddy in that one. Like, did you have a lot of sessions with him?
We passed each other once in the hallway. I mean, we were aware of each other, and I know Roger from the voiceover world. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he knew me before this at all, but because voiceover is this very isolated thing, you know, it's we're all individuals in a booth behind a mic. It's very rare that you're ever acting with someone else. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that you even see somebody else when you're doing an animation project or a video game project. You're all interacting on screen in the game, but you might never meet each other. Like, I didn't meet Courtney Taylor, plays Ada Wong, mm-hmm. until the rap party. I didn't meet...
Oh, wow. You're just like, you're the one I hear all the time.
Yeah, I met Matthew Mercer before we began. We sort of had this big pizza party to get filled in on the whole universe of Resident Evil from Liam O'Brien again. He gave us like this PowerPoint presentation of everything to bring us up to speed. I met Matthew Mercer at that time, plays Leon, of course, Leon mm-hmm. Kennedy. But then didn't see him for a year and a half until E3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so and that was after we had already been done with the game, all production on the game, as far as art side was concerned, a good 6 months prior to that.
Yeah. Cause you know, I was checking out a little bit of background research on that. And I saw like a lot of it were just individual segments and recordings. So I kind of figured, oh, maybe I'll do some more group work. Cause there's a lot of like big voice actors this time around. So that's a little, I don't want to say that's shocking, but. That is, it's shocking. That's exactly what it is. So
yeah, it's really crazy. I mean, because you sort of know the story, especially the Chris Redfield stuff. I mean, I got to hear a lot of Roger's voice in my head.
Yeah.
So in a way, I'm acting with him that way. He's not there live, but I'm getting to hear some of his work, some of its temp track. But then it's kind of like one of those things where when the project's completely done and you actually get to play some of the game, or you get to see some of your own scenes, or or play different campaigns you had nothing to do with entirely, like the Leon or the Jake or the Ada stuff, that you kind of go, oh, that's what you were doing. Ah, good job. You know, it's like you see it after the fact. You have no idea in the moment of who's really creating what.
Yeah. So did you see like the actual gameplay and everything like way after everything was done, as far as like, or was you were only exposed to your part of the story?
I was mostly exposed only to my part of the story, and I would see stuff as the game evolved during the course of the year, because we did sessions throughout 2011. The first session was literally, I think, November or December of 2010, and we did our last session about that time of 2011. And so throughout the year, you actually see the visuals of the game evolve as you guys, Capcom Japan is sending more material over, or they're rendering stuff or finalizing. And so when you start with these, you start with almost like temp video tracks of the actors. Like Kevin Dorman was my body motion capture artist for Piers, and Ruben Langdon was Chris Redfield's body capture. And so we get to see what will later be turned into the full characters, the full rendered characters in the world, but are just videos, like real time in the motion capture volume videos of them performing the scene for body mocap. And sometimes you're reading to that. And so it would start with that, where you're not seeing any of the game, but just that on a soundstage, to, as you get closer to the end of production, you're actually starting to see some of the final renders, the final skins and the world. And some of that you're reading to, sometimes you have to do a pickup of a line in a certain place. So you start to see the game sort of assemble itself throughout the year. But even then, Capcom still had a good, 8, 9 months or so. It came out in October of 2012. October. So they had a good like nine or 10 months of finalizing the game by the time I was seeing the last material that I would see in the studio. So it's such a crazy process. It's an amazing process to make these games.
So as far as the body capturing goes, was it actually like your body, or was it just your face for the actual...
It's my voice, and it's my facial performance.
Okay.
Kind of like a lot of people are more familiar with what they did with L.A. Noire, or when you say like a Polar Express or Avatar.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's kind of more those performances of the people who are actually vocalizing is now their faces, nine times out of 10. Some of it's still animated, like the Uncharted series still goes with animation style instead of facial mocap.
Oh,
but
wow, Nolan North still hasn't upgraded yet, has he?
Nolan North, yeah, I'd love Nolan.
yeah, I saw that you also had some Spider-Man work done too, and he did some Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah, I got to be the voice double for James Franco as Harry Osborn in, was it Spider-Man 2 or 3 video game? A lot of it's him, ultimately. I was going to do the whole thing, but Franco ended up coming on board to voice stuff, so it's kind of a mix of the two of us, I think, depending on which pickup they used of mine.
Yeah.
So,
so I guess while we're jumping from different video games, what other video game work have you done?
XCOM. XCOM just came out recently.
Oh, nice. XCOM's
awesome. I play sort of various characters, and then I play technician, because the nature of the game, if you're familiar with it, it's all these different types of departments and roles, and very strategy based game where you have to call up the services of a technician. I'm that technician, or I play, I think, a sergeant or a lieutenant later in the game, but various roles throughout XCOM. But RE6 was my first big lead of this magnitude, of this much involvement with the facial mocap and the full lead character and all that stuff.
Was it pretty hard not to just like start screaming out in excitement and go tell all your friends when you know you couldn't?
I made sure, like I kind of towed the line a little bit, where I asked everybody about the non-disclosure agreement. I said, does that mean I can't talk about it at all, or is this the type of thing where kind of, you know, behind closed doors, and just verbally, can I tell them, you know, that
like
that,
legally can't use the number 6 and resident or in the same paragraph?
Yeah. How much are we? And they said basically I just couldn't type it, text it, email it, Twitter, Facebook, blog. You know, it was mostly that stuff.
Oh, okay.
Or even really, they actually did say never leave a voicemail where my audio could get out into the ether. Don't leave a voicemail saying that I was Piers Niven's RE6. But verbally, no recording devices of any kind around, I could talk about it. And so some people knew as I was doing it.
So by the time you were able to talk about it, like, when was this? Like, how long before the game came out? Or was it just like
Comic-Con
was announced? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't all the way until Comic-Con 2012 that that Capcom was actually going to wait until the end of Comic-Con to make the announcement, but it sort of came out in the middle of Comic-Con, and I started getting all these tweets and texts from the cast and fans and crew and stuff. It was just announced. We can talk about it now. And all of a sudden I'm seeing, you know, Courtney and Roger Craigsmith and Matt Mercer.
starting, he's that good of a voice actor. You call him that now.
Yeah. Well, he insists on it. He's a real diva. He now only goes by Leon Kennedy.
Does he really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. I was totally going to go with that.
He's so the opposite of a diva. Matthew Mercer's like the just most fantastically nice person in the world.
Just a sweetheart.
Yeah. Yeah. They got some blockbusters and next year, and it's really, really exciting to be a part of it. It's such an innovative world, especially right now. Video games are just they have the most upward mobility of and the most innovation going on in terms of storytelling. The advent of motion capture and just all these different technologies. It's just an amazing field to be a part of right now. It's very exciting stuff, especially for a super geek.
So does Capcom still kind of have you on file? Do they have like other plans for you or any like kind of post-apocalyptic zombie Nivens experiences? Because for those of you who haven't finished the campaign yet.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, he's totally toast.
He's probably pretty toast. I know nothing. I truly know nothing. I will be the last to know, I'm sure, if Piers has a future under the Capcom banner of any kind. And so, I mean, I like to hold out hope. I like to play the end of the game over and over, looking at it going, well, you know what? We didn't actually see him die.
Yeah, so, that's always the one thing I kind of try to keep in mind, too.
Yeah, he might have been like all electrified and melting from the inside out and in a bad way. But hey, you know, and technically.
That's the cool thing about this whole Resident Evil like theology. Like anybody could come back because it has to do with reanimation. People die.
Yeah,
people
you know. Back. So I told the producer that who basically told me through a Japanese translator, no such luck. you're dead. I don't know what the Japanese expression, but for you're dead is. But I got that he meant it, and he meant it emphatically. But I was like, oh, all right. So, but who knows? Maybe they'll find a way. You know, maybe there'll be a whole prequel adventure or something, or who knows? But I hold out hope that that Piers Niven's will somehow resurface.
So what's your favorite Niven's line in the game?
My favorite Piers Niven's line is probably what is it? They're fighting in that hallway or in that corridor, and what does he say? He says your personal vendetta isn't going to get us anywhere. How many men had to die? Listen, believing in you, I feel sorry for. No, I guess I really like that scene. It's not a specific line. I just really like when Chris Redfield and Piers Niven finally come to a head, and
yeah,
Piers just unloads on Chris for being such a downer.
Yeah, because like for a while, like Niven's just trying to like point him and guide him straight, and then Chris is just like, "No, I'm gonna save my dudes," and then just kind of ignores him. And then yeah, right at that point is when they finally start seeing like eye to eye a little bit after he kind of breaks them down a bit.
Yeah, yeah, you know. So I guess he says, you know, wherever you go. Oh God, I should revisit the lines. I played the frickin' game now, and I'm the character, but. I should have a better answer for that ready. No, I just like the character. Wherever you go, you cannot hide from your past, Chris. Something like that.
So what'd you do to try to like kind of like research Niven's? Because he sounds pretty different from you. So how do you kind of get into that mood of who he is? Because I noticed in your sizzle video, you actually researched embedded military journalist stories. How did that kind of bring on Niven's from there?
Well, it there's a certain cadence, you know. There's a certain way these guys really talk to each other. I mean, hardcore military ops. Their communication is so efficient, and it's so, I don't want to say emotionless. Mm-hmm. It is so direct. It is so powerful. It is clinical execution of communication, mm-hmm. Which is what I focused on. That I'm going to be behind the mic doing that. And so it's this real, like, you could be in the heat of battle and you even see this on embedded stuff when they're doing interviews with like an NBC reporter or something. And these guys, there are bombs going off in the distance, or, you know, in the mountains of Afghanistan or something. And these guys are standing there, and it's like they're talking about grilling a burger or something. Yeah, I don't even know what to say. It's like you're standing in their backyard, mm-hmm. but you're kind of annoying them. You know what I mean? There's this sound to their voice that's so just kind of like, yeah, we're gonna go over here. We might all get killed, but let's go. It's real, just sort of. It's there isn't any time to worry about anything other than the mission. And so I guess that kind of that energy in that sense starts to create a character and starts to tell you more about how he should sound, instead of you going like, well, I want Peters to sound this way. Mm-hmm. It's more, you kind of go where the energy flows and the character starts to tell you how he should sound.
So as far as the director goes, is he just like, oh, I like what you kind of made there, but, or is he just like, I want you to do this. And bring some of your research along with you and bring that voice along with you.
You're creating the character, but I mean, Liam O'Brien is such a great director. He has such an ability to not only know exactly what he wants, which is key in a director, but the ability to communicate it effectively, which is the other half that can be hit or miss sometimes with the director. A director can have great ideas, but if that director can't get that idea out mm-hmm. effectively, then it's half baked, you know, it's half of the equation. And so you bring what you bring to the table, and you bring the life of it. But to have that direction, that is just one step ahead of you, or inspires you, or just makes you that much better, is so fortunate to have when you have a director like that. And that's absolutely Liam. It's you do something and Liam goes, all right, that's good. Do this, or maybe try this. And you just kind of fly through all this material by the seat of your pants, and with Liam as your guide, and you just kind of being in that character, and it all just seems to come together. It all coalesces and yields, hopefully, a result that the fans dig, you know?
Yeah. So how many hours worth of recording audio do you think you have for the game? Like as far as session studio hours and the actual lines in the game?
I don't know what it is exactly, but we did dozens of sessions. I mean, I probably did around two dozen sessions throughout the entire year. Mm-hmm. And each session probably averaged about 5 hours. We do anything from like three to eight hours-ish. Three or four hours would be a short session. So, I mean, yeah, it's probably about 5 or 6 hours per session, all the dots and everything most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that was actual recording time. And then I think I saw online someone, this isn't the actual gameplay. There's much more material in the gameplay, but if you put the cutscenes, if you put all the Piers Niven's, Chris Redfield campaign cutscenes end for end as a movie, mm-hmm. And without any gameplay, it comes to almost an hour of finished movie. Basically, it's kind of like a feature. It's like a 1 hour feature film of watching all the cutscenes end for end. And that's not counting the, probably I would say, what, quintuple.
I guess while we're on the subject, I have kind of like a semi touchy kind of question. So a lot of fans were kind of a little bit thinking that the cutscenes were a little bit abundant in the game. And there was a lot of lines of dialogue, and it's great dialogue. The cinematics are amazing for it. But as far as the gameplay to cutscene ratio, like, it takes over a lot. Like, what are your thoughts and opinion on it? Because obviously this is like your bread and butter for the game itself.
Yeah, and I've noticed this with games. As the technology gets better and you get to tap the resources, you get to tap the talent of such actors and performers as Nolan North and Jennifer Hale and Peter Jessup and Roger Craig Smith and DC Douglas. And, you know, I humbly am somewhere way down here from that spectacular list.
No.
Of actors. When you get to have those people, I think games tend to want to utilize them, right? So mm-hmm. and the nature of the storytelling, like the amount of cutscenes has just grown and grown and grown. And I totally get it. It's like it's a game, it's not a movie. I think the industry is still finding its way. I think there is so much experimentation going on, mm-hmm. With the seamless cutscene to gameplay action that takes place in a game like Uncharted,
yeah,
or where you're kind of living every cutscene, mm-hmm. Kind of maybe like an LA noir, or maybe when there's a lot of cutscene and smaller gameplay that you said that people say about Resident Evil 6. I think there's so much kind of like, well, let's try this, and I think it will reach an equilibrium of some kind. I think the form is still growing, and mm-hmm. and at some point, I don't think it'll ever be one thing. I think it'll just kind of grow into being its own thing. You'll have entire categories that are these LA noir categories, or these things that are just straight up gameplay, say like more like Catherine or. Mm-hmm.
Gears of War,
Skyrim, yeah. Or, you know, and so yeah, I to focus on one game and say it's got too many cutscenes. Well, you know, maybe, but maybe you're probably right, or you know, but that's kind of like what you're getting with that experiment at that time, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know, it's kind of. It's an interesting topic and one that I should probably think about more.
Yeah, definitely, because it's super easy to convey the story while the cinematics are there, but once you're breaking up the gameplay, it's hard to, oh, I need to pay attention to what I'm doing objectively and then find out what's going on story-wise.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant answer. That I like where you stand on that. So do you have any other kind of plans coming up after this?
Nope. I do. I got two feature films next year that I'm filming. One opposite Eric Roberts and this horror film. So those Antioch and Artist Divest in Black. But with that, I should probably bid you adieu because I'm going to be late for this other one, and I need to go ahead and call into them. So
Perfect. It's been great. Super
awesome to talk to you and Comic Book Therapy and everybody. It's fantastic to be here. So thank you so much for having
me. Thank you, Christopher. You've been awesome.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
All right, we have a brand new segment this week. Very excited about Cody's Filler Time.
Cody's filler time.
Fill us some time there, Cody.
Well, since we're waiting for another segment to start, I'll let you know about some non-nerdy movies that I checked out this week. First up is The Perks of Being a Wallflower. That's a coming-of-age teenage tale starring Emma Watson, Logan Lerman from Percy Jackson fame, and Ezra Miller. It's a touching coming-of-age teenage little film. It's actually a really good movie. A lot of people will probably find it emotional. Great story and great cast. Another quick hit for you here is Zero Dark Thirty. That's the Bin Laden movie that I'm sure you've heard a lot about by now. Mm-hmm. A little slow in parts, a little draggy, but it's supposed to be to show what a long and tedious hunt it was to find Bin Laden. But great performances all around and really worth checking out sometime.
You might have a happy ending.
No, not really.
You know,
depending on how you define that, but I believe we all know how that one ends.
Yeah.
Not a big spoiler.
Wow. Does it end with him in the sea?
Surprisingly, no, it does not.
Oh, okay.
I think it should end with just the double tap and then. Yeah! Credits.
Obama shows up and says, "We got him."
I will tease there is a John Barrowman cameo. He pops up for about 45 seconds in the last 20 minutes or so of the movie.
That's odd. That's kind of it.
Yeah, very odd, but a surprising role for him. You can check that out to learn more.
Was he good?
Yeah, he was very good. He had maybe 5 sentences of dialogue, but he was very good in his little snippet of a scene.
Kind of surprised he's in it for 45 seconds, you know. I'm surprised that he's in it because, you know, he's a talented guy, but surprised that it's 45 seconds of flick.
With Arrow and his appearance in Zero Dark Thirty, I would expect to see a lot more of John Barrowman stateside.
Yeah, hopefully so. He's a good dude. A good actor as well.
I saw that, what's his name, that Chris, I can't think of his name, he plays on Parks and Recreation. He lost like a lot of weight for that role and really got in shape to be one of the Navy SEALs in that movie.
Guy does he play in Parks? Is that the guy with the beard that does the shoe shining?
Yeah, he's the shoe shine guy. Yeah. He got like really in shape for this role. I mean, he was cut. And then he gained like 65 pounds to do like a fat guy in another movie right after that.
That dude's funny though.
Yeah. It's Chris something. Chris Pratt is his name. Great actor. I like him. He's pretty cool. All right, what's the last movie? It was Django, of course.
Django is absolutely awesome. Absolutely
the Django.
Incredible movie.
Loved it, man.
Still need to see that one.
I am of the opinion that is probably the best movie that Tarantino ever made so far. And I dare to say better than Reservoir Dogs. And I fucking love Reservoir Dogs. But Django really surprised me. It was a tough subject matter, as everyone has already said. But it just surprised me because it's so good and funny at certain points. You can't help but just throw a smile at certain scenes because, you know, it's just funny and serious at the same time. I don't know. Maybe it was just me, but I love
Tarantino. I mean, he's a guy that can cut someone's ear off and make you laugh at the same time. So,
I enjoyed it. I honestly enjoyed it better than Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah,
I love that movie. But you know, Christoph Waltz was awesome in this movie. I mean, I loved him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, you know, now that I saw Jamie Foxx in this movie, I might change my mind about seeing him in Amazing Spider-Man 2. He actually changed my mind. So that's saying something, you know, seeing a movie like this. And you know, I mean, especially with all the slurs and everything in that movie. I mean, it's abundant. You know, to do a movie like that and just kind of like not even bother you. He was great in the movie, and
he has range.
I thought he was a great actor. I mean,
yeah, he is.
What was that flick he did? I haven't seen him in a whole lot.
There's an excellent movie that I think that's the one you're talking about with Robert Downey Jr. that he did. It's called The Soloist.
I haven't seen that. I heard
that.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. It looks like an artsy fartsy cry movie, drama movie, but it's absolutely brilliant, and the range on him on that movie, it's brilliant, man. And Robert Downey, obviously, but they play well from each other, so it's a brilliant movie as well. I recommend it highly.
I just remember him from that what was that movie he was in with Tom Cruise?
Collateral. Yeah, the
Texas not a whole lot to do in that, but I just remember he brought like a lot of serious stuff to it, and
yeah,
did
yeah.
really good with not a whole lot to work with. Well, I mean, I guess mostly he was just scared throughout the movie, but he seemed to do a lot with. I mean, this is a guy I grew up with as a little kid watching dressed up like a woman on Killers.
Exactly.
And we can't.
So I'm shocked when he does anything.
We can't forget Ray as well when he played Ray.
Yeah,
Charles.
You know, that was brilliant. Brilliant movie as well.
You know, now looking back, I think he's actually too high profile for his Amazing Spider-Man 2. I think if they pay, you know, if he gets like a couple million, man, he's getting a deal. You know, they're getting a deal out of him if he's accepting like crappy pay for this movie.
Thank you, Cody. All right, now that X's testicle difficulties are fixed,
okay,
it's time for another segment, another episode of Rated X.
Rated X. All right, so last week we took a look back at 2012, some of the movies that were good and not so good. So this week we're going to look to the future, to 2013, some of the movies that are out. Obviously you have movies like Iron Man 3, Pacific Rim, Wolverine, a few others. We're not going to talk about those because I think those get enough attention as it is. What we're looking to do today is look at some of the movies that I think will kind of surprise people. And, you know, a lot of people don't even know they're coming out. So, okay. So what I was talking about is Evil Dead. We just saw a Red Band trailer for this new movie, a remake of the classic horror film. I'm still undecided on this one. Everything kind of looks cool about it, but to take a movie like Evil Dead and remake it is kind of blasphemy, even if Sam Raimi and what's his name?
Bruce Campbell.
That's the one. Even, you know, I'm just still nervous about that project. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I feel the same way, man. I don't know. I'm going to watch it because, you know.
Just because.
But, you know, I'm not going to go in there expecting it to be crap or great. I'm just going to go in there and watch it, and it's going to be a totally new movie, you know. I still have my Evil Dead movie, so it's fine.
Me too.
Who's making it?
What's that?
Who's making it? Like, anyone we're talking about?
I can't remember the director's name.
His name is Fed Alvarez?
Yeah, Alvarez. And if he's got Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi's, you know, like, blessing, and, you know, I don't know how Bruce Campbell feels, because he's all old and everything, but of course he's going to say, oh, yeah, I like it, but, they all say that every time there's a remake. Yeah, I give him a blessing, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's because they're getting paid to keep the mouth shut, probably.
Exactly.
He ain't seen the movie, probably, you know, he doesn't know.
Yeah, that could all change when that all comes out, so who knows?
I don't know. I mean, they let anyone make a horror movie. I mean, really, I mean, it's not all like Peter Jackson and Sam Raimi and those guys that get famous on it. I mean, those are the exceptions to the rule, I think.
Right.
Maybe it'll be cool, like, if, you know, if it has, like, the same character of Ash and he gets his hand chopped off and stuff like that happens, but I don't know, are they going that direction with it, you think, or?
Since the female was supposed to be the Ash character, she might even just die in this movie. We don't know. We don't know if Ash is going to be the character that lives. None of them might live at the end. You know, I don't know, because the way they're doing it, you know, Evil Dead, they kind of felt like there was a sequels after each one, especially Evil Dead 2, you know, had Army of Darkness. I think this was just a standalone film. I don't think there's any kind of sequels planned. And there might be some in the future, but I doubt it. It'll just be this, and we won't hear from Evil Dead for another 20 years.
Until they remake it again.
Exactly.
Everyone's dead.
I'm surprised they remade it anyways.
Yeah.
The trailers have done nothing for me on that one. The only thing that makes you think Evil Dead is they call it Evil Dead.
Yeah, I mean, you see the book. You see the book, you see the tree rape and stuff like that, and you're like, eh. It kind of reminds me of, like, The Exorcist a little bit, because the way the girl looks, but it's just kind of like gross factor.
The book is everywhere. It's just not on... It's not an exclusive of Evil Dead. The book is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's been on several other movies, so to have the book there or not to have seems to be the same fucking thing. Because, again, as Cody said, the trailer does nothing apart from calling it Evil Dead. For me, it's passable. I don't want to look at it.
The only thing I've heard anyone say about it is it just looks way too gross for no reason.
Torture porn.
Yeah.
Me. A lot of blood, a lot of gore.
Yeah, but at the time that the first Evil Dead came out, that was the same thing that people were saying. Oh my God, what is this and all of that? It was a shit fest of blood. But to do it now, in this day and age, that, you know, blood and gore and horror and all of that is not commonplace, but it's in full force, and you can get it in every fucking movie. To do it now,
you lose
it just seems
the shock value of it.
Yeah, that's it. There's no shock value.
It's like, no, you know how the Evil Dead movies, they had that humor in it a little bit too. Even the first one, you know, even supposed to be scary, it was kind of funny.
But this one, man, is just straight up. I don't think it's supposed to have any humor in it, period. And I think that's where it's going to be the downfall of them. Because, you know, Evil Dead has a certain feel to it, and like you say, it doesn't have that movie, you know, that feel to it. And I think if they take the humor away from it, it won't be a great movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think we saw... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it almost seems like Cabin in the Woods was more of a remake of Evil Dead than
Yeah, definitely.
That's more like a spiritual...
I shouldn't let you go ahead. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Definitely the spiritual successor to it. Yeah, I feel similar. All right, go ahead, Josh.
Okay.
What's next?
Next one up I have is This Is the End, the one starring a little bit of everyone. Seth Rogen, James Franco, Paul Rudd.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Rochelle, Jonah Hill, Jason Segel, Michael Cera, and I think a few more.
Yeah, a lot
playing
of
themselves,
that.
Yes.
Yeah, playing themselves. Basically, it's while attending a party at James Franco's house, Seth Rogen and the crew are faced with the apocalypse. So, kind of came out of nowhere. Again, another one I hadn't really heard much about.
It's the first time I'm hearing about this. What is this?
Oh, it's
really
it's, the, end of the world with all those guys from the. Oh God, what's his name? The director.
Is there a trailer for this already?
Evan Goldberg.
No, I was thinking more like
the Avatar.
It's like an end of the world with the actors from that.
Edgar Wright also has World's End coming up, and a lot of people are.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah, the Tornado Saga. But anyways, is there a trailer for the end of the world?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's the actors playing themselves, like the day after the world starts ending, and some people noticed
it. I think it was with James Franco or one of the other ones, and they were like, yeah, man, we just wanted to have a bunch of the guys, like, you know, like Will Smith just over there in the corner, and it's actually Will Smith dead in the corner. We wanted to have and I was like, yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah, just have him play himself as a dead guy in the corner. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a creative idea, and definitely I have no doubt that it'll be funny.
Yeah, and that's based off the Doors song of the same name, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that. You can quote Cody on that, not me.
In that, they're both called The End.
Yes.
Thanks for that Cheeto fact right there.
Yeah, we're not going to let you talk anymore, Cody. I just wanted to say one more thing about this. What struck me about it, I really love it when they do, like, meta humor like that. Like, you know, they had the Supernatural episode where they were all playing themselves as actors and just little inside jokes and stuff like that. And I'm looking forward to that, a whole movie of those guys just ripping on each other.
Hey, you can't go wrong with Danny McBride, I feel like. You know, he's gold. He's from North Carolina, so.
It feels like that scene from the Bill Murray scene from... oh my God!
Zombieland.
Yeah. Bill Murray playing Bill Murray.
Yeah,
a dead Bill.
That was the best. That was one of the best cameos ever.
Oh my God!
It's in the top 10.
We shouldn't even be talking about it for people who haven't seen it.
Spoiler alert.
Too late.
Screw me. If they haven't watched it by now, you know, unless they're not born, you know, I can't. Yeah, but if they haven't watched it now, screw them.
People that aren't born are listening to this right now.
Yeah, I'm saying, yeah. 10 years down the road when they're listening to this show, and then we spoil it for them because they're like 9 years old or some crap like that, and they shouldn't be listening to this show anyways. But if we
tell you before, to say that.
I apologize. And I think I have some more Cheeto facts for you. Get off my back.
All right, since Cody mentioned it, we'll talk about The World's End, which is Edgar Wright's latest movie, final film in the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy.
Yes.
Which
I have not heard about this.
What?
The final film of it? Wow.
Yeah, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, The Hobbit himself, Martin Freeman, and Rosamund Pike all star in this one.
I love it, man. I can't wait.
Rosamund
Pike. Other two films in this series were fantastic, so I have no doubt this one will be just as good. This one, again, quick plot synopsis is five friends who reunite in an attempt to top their epic pub crawl from 20 years earlier unwittingly become humankind's only hope for survival. So our lives are in the hands of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, so I don't know how that will work out. So, again, Edgar Wright, can't go wrong, and the cast and everything like that, so. I think that comes out later this year, in the fall time, so.
Yeah, that's the only fault, is it's coming at the end of the year.
Exactly. We have to wait for it. Let's see. Another movie I honestly have not heard much about this one, even though I think filming is done and wrapped, is R.I.P.D.
I think they did.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds, Jeff Bridges, Kevin Bacon. Based on the graphic novel, I have not read this one, so I don't know much about it. Any of you guys?
I think Witty's recommends next week, man. You need to pick that up so we can find out about it, because I have no idea what this is about.
Nothing.
No idea. Is Whitney there? Have you passed out?
He's reading it now. He's going to let us know about it.
Okay. Yeah, okay. We'll wait. Well, in the meantime, I'd like to talk about Top Gun 3D, Cody's most wanted movie of the year. Comes out in February, I believe.
Waiting in line for that one.
He pre-ordered his tickets last year.
I have the need to see Tom Cruise in 3D.
Exactly. Because you're dangerous. You're dangerous, man.
So they can't do a sequel, so they're doing a 3D. Fuck.
Of course. Gotta make money off of it somehow.
Yeah, well, I suppose so.
Jurassic Park 3D, of course.
They've had a long time to make money off that, haven't they?
Yeah.
When Tom Cruise was still relevant.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's no merchandise for that. I don't think they released any merchandise for it, did they? What kind t-shirts. Of merchandise can you do? Yeah, well, yeah, t-shirts.
And a lot of hats.
Kelly McGillis dolls.
Have you seen her lately? Not a good thing.
I'd rather not see her lately.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even recognize her.
That leather coat that she puts on that bomber jacket or whatever? Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Even now.
No, you will.
You will.
Oh, Lord.
I'm making you.
Yeah. Just make sure.
I'll hold a gun to your head and be like, you better imagine her now age. With that bomber jacket on.
This is going to a dark place.
Oh, jeez.
Where were you while ago?
When this podcast is used as evidence in court, I just want everyone to know that the majority of us had nothing to do with it.
It was so Cody's master plan. Whitty, where were you when we were talking about RIPD?
I muted it on accident.
I was waiting for you to say anything. So, okay, going back to RIPD.
I was like, why are they talking over me, jackasses?
Okay, now going back to RIPD.
I was going to say, I haven't looked into that movie. It gives me the vibe of, like, what was that Brandon Ralph comic book movie he did?
Oh, Dylan Dog.
Dylan Dog.
Yeah, I don't know why it just gives me that vibe, and I'm just like,
I get the same feeling from it, yeah.
I get the same feeling, man.
No more.
Okay, next up I have 300 Rise of an Empire.
Oh, no.
Nobody cares.
The reason why I bring this up is because it's going to suck.
Yeah.
Do the little trumpet sound that Stewie does in the Family Guy right here, because that movie is just a stinker.
Womp, womp, womp. All right, moving on. I, Frankenstein.
I don't know a lot about it, but...
Did you say you don't care, Cody? Cody doesn't care.
I don't care, like I, Frankenstein. It's a joke, but you clearly didn't get it.
I don't care.
Got it now. Alright.
Over your head. It's one of those movies I don't know much about. I mean, how much can you do with Frankenstein?
This one is set in modern telling. It's based off a graphic novel written by Kevin, the dude from Underworld, the giant black guy.
That's racist.
It is. I know. I can't. Kevin Grayview or Gray? I can't remember how to pronounce his name. All right. Next one is a Spike Lee joint in Old Boy, remake of the original. Josh Brolin, Charlton Copley, Samuel L. Jackson. I haven't decided on this one either. Could be good, could be bad. I think they got a good cast. Sticking close to the story, I think. Last I read. So I don't know, you guys have seen the original one, right?
Yeah, yeah, loved it.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It got the mind frick of no other, but it's a good one.
It is. I don't know, I think they're going to go to a different place. I don't think they're going to follow exactly the way the... Because, I mean, you don't have a surprise if you're doing a remake, right? So they're going to do something else towards the end, I believe. And, you know, keep the essential storyline, but, you know, I don't see how you can fail with the cast. I mean, Spike Lee, you know, he does pretty decent movies, and, you know, I think for him to actually do a remake, he's going to try to do it justice, you know.
Right. Let's see. World War Z.
Oh, God.
Cody's favorite movie. Next to Batman 40. I'm a big fan of the book, as I've stated many times, and they've raped the storyline to the point where it's nearly unrecognizable, except that they're zombies. The trailer looked bad to me. A lot of people got amped up about it, but I thought it was horrible. I'm really kind of disappointed in it, but not to mention all the production troubles they had with it and all the reshoots and fighting on set and everything like that. Good times right there.
I'm at the point that I have no opinion for this movie whatsoever. I despise this movie so greatly that I have no opinion of it.
That sounds like an opinion, Pedro.
No.
That was an opinion.
That's how I feel about the movie. I despise it, but I have no opinion of it.
Your lack of opinion is disturbing. An opinion.
I think we're having a language barrier right now.
having no opinion, telling people you have no opinion about a movie in Europe is no opinion, but here it's an opinion.
No, it's no opinion. It doesn't do anything for me, so I'm not looking forward for this movie. Or I hate it. I just want it to go away badly.
That would be like saying that's like saying that I have no opinion of X. I clearly have an opinion of X.
Who's X? The bald walrus? No, I have no opinion of him.
Bastard.
Seriously,
Husky Goldberg.
Seriously, guys, I just think that picking up all the properties that they can and just transform them into this huge pile of shit. Because that's what that movie is. It's a huge pile of shit. It's a good book, as X was saying. It's a good book, but as a movie. That movie, that trailer that I saw, that is a pile of shit. And what those zombies were doing, that swarm scene.
That zombie thing.
That was they were forming a pile of shit because they knew that the movie is shit.
Right, Pedro. Thank you for that completely non-opinionated, impartial review.
No opinion whatsoever. Nothing.
Oh, all right. Let's talk about the incredible Burt Blunderstone.
Oh, man.
We have Steve Carell, Jim Carrey, Steve Buscemi, and the always lovely Olivia Wilde starring in this one.
So wait a minute. So who's in it again? Slowly.
Steve Carell.
Win.
Jim Carrey.
Ah.
Steve Buscemi.
Beautiful.
And Olivia Wilde.
How can you go wrong? How can you go wrong?
Yeah. This will be a good one.
Again, Pedro has no opinion about this movie.
No opinion whatsoever.
No opinion whatsoever other than it's going to be awesome.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Nothing.
Any movie that keeps alive the Chris Angel hate is okay with me.
There you go.
And the David Blaine, because they're mixing him in there too.
I concur.
Because he's the worst magician ever.
I just want David Copperfield to just show up out of random, because for no reason.
That would be disturbing, I think.
Or who are the two tiger dudes? The one that got his face bit off?
Siegfried Roy. That's what I said last show. They have to have a tiger that bites somebody's face off.
It's required.
Just as a nod, yeah.
Or at least take a chunk out of someone's ass. I don't know.
Nah, face. That's why Steve Buscemi looks like that, because the tiger attacked it earlier in his career. And that's the way they should do it. Play it up like that.
Let's go with that. I like it. Alright, Kick-Ass 2, Balls to the Wall. Another pointless movie, in my opinion.
Jim Carrey yet again.
Yes.
Is going to be carrying this movie.
I think you're right.
I think they missed their chance with this.
Yeah,
I think so.
Like the high school kid is what, he's like 40 years old and married with grandkids now, and
a 60 year old,
to like a 50 year old woman, and
yeah,
like I think I said this last week. The little girl is like 17 or 25 now.
She's like 15, I think 16.
Oh, wait a minute. She looks like she's done.
She's
like growing
too old
up,
but for an 11 year old, yeah.
Yeah, she's too old for Hit Girl, that's for sure. I don't know. This one just knocks. I love the first one, except for the jetpack. This one, yeah. I'm just not. Not good.
I think they're bringing in Nicolas Cage for some flashbacks, or I don't know, maybe a zombie. I don't know.
Pointless.
I will say that's one of the few movies I can actually tolerate Nick Cage in. You know, just because I get to see him burn.
Yeah, when he yells when he's burning,
I thought that was a great scene. Actually, yeah. I liked it. So,
you know, right. I thought the movie lost steam just like what it turned into in the second half. I thought the whole point of the movie was it was the real world and he was just some kid, and
right.
It's like it goes so far into the world of like fantasy and just falls in love with itself being, you know, little kids cussing and killing people, that almost completely loses the point. I can't imagine it'll regain the point in the sequel.
If you want to see a good kick-ass movie, just watch James Gunn Super. It's what Kick-Ass 2 should be, basically.
But we know it won't be, sadly.
No.
And my final movie. Okay, I have two more.
Oh, come on.
Sorry. Okay, first one is Ender's Game.
It's what?
Ender's Game.
Ender's Game, yeah.
Yeah, based
with Harrison
on the,
Ford.
Yeah. Asia Butterfield, who was in Hugo, Abigail Breslin, Harrison Ford. I haven't read this book, but
where's the refrigerator at, kid? Indiana Jones is like 70 years old. He's got Alzheimer's, so he just starts getting in the fridge. Shalikov's like, Dad, why are you doing in the fridge again? War's over. He's like, shut up, Mutt, I'm in the fridge.
Shut up.
What the hell are you doing, Pedro?
I'm in the fridge.
I'm in the closet.
He's doing Harrison Ford from Cowboys and Aliens, because that's the way he talked in the movie.
I gotcha.
Cowboys, Daniel Craig, as
Aliens.
I miss Beginner's Game. Well, I know what's going on in this movie.
A prequel? Yeah, I think you'll be okay.
Wait a minute, there was a Beginner's Game? Makes sense, doesn't it?
Only in collector's edition is available.
There's an Ender's Game, does it? You know,
I think the Beginner's Game is for teenagers, and it's a book about dating.
About what?
Dating.
It's a book about dating?
Yeah, peacocking and stuff like Beginner's Game. You're like, Beginner's Game? Get it? Game?
I'm
oh my god, dude.
Yeah, that one failed on him, Woody. Sorry about that.
I don't know how it failed. That was gold.
Oh, jeez. All right. Gold. Final film to discuss is Anchorman, The Legend Continues.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I don't see how this one could be bad. Plus, they have musical numbers.
I don't know. Didn't they have a something happen here this week? Somebody, wire thieves? Somebody went on set and stole a bunch of wires or something like that?
It's probably Will Ferrell just being himself. And
Somebody went on set and stole a bunch of stuff, so I think they had to push back like a week or something like that.
Yeah. I didn't read that article, but I think you're right.
Surprised he didn't report on it.
Who? Woody? What?
He's an anchor band. God, come on, guys. Seriously, guys? Did y'all not watch the first movie?
Please leave.
For the good of this show, we need to end Josh's segment.
Yes.
Thank you, X, for the love of God.
X's segment only works 60% of the time, every time. finally, guys.
Be warned. Here there be rumors.
This week, Jamie Alexander was talking about Thor and Sif possibly having some sort of relationship in Thor 2. What do you guys think about that? Another love triangle?
Honestly, I think it's a bad idea since they didn't hint at any kind of relationship in the first one, other than friendship.
Mm-hmm.
That's the greatest ship of all. I think maybe if they hinted at her being jealous a little bit, because I didn't get that at all from the first movie when she met, like, Jane. I was thinking, okay, she should be a little bit more pissed off that he's fallen in love with this Earth girl after, like, a week. And, you know, he's been around for, what, thousands of years with Sif, and she doesn't get any play. Like, what do you think? So, you know,
it seemed like she liked him in the movie, but, yeah, she wasn't, like, catty about it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's okay. I'm glad they're going there because it's the way it is in the comic books, you know. That's my
fight between Natalie Portman and...
we all knew who would win on that one. If it was a boo contest, we know who would win that one. I'm sorry.
Natalie Portman, if you're listening, we're sorry.
We would all be lucky to have you.
Yeah, I apologize. Not really. It's still me.
But you're saying we'd be luckier to have Jamie Alexander?
Exactly. If you're listening, yeah, come on the show. Alright, okay. Cody, what's your opinion on the movie?
Well, we know it takes place after the Avengers. We don't know how long. Plus, Asgard time and Earth time aren't exactly the same, so we could come in on a fuller developed relationship on the second movie. I don't know. Just what I think. Just throwing that out there.
Just get Zap on her. I promise I'd come back for you, Jane Foster. Yes, I did come back to Earth, but I had some shit to do, and I had a date to get back to.
No, I was busy. No, I'm not. You want to hang out? A cup of coffee?
Some shawarma?
Yeah.
I hung out with your old boss, but, you know, me and him are bros. Bros. So, yeah. That's better than our relationship, Jane.
Bros for life. Bros before.
Yeah, he wasn't even like, hey, can you give her a message? He just, like, turned that little lever on the cosmic cube and sucked back up to Asgard.
Yeah, she really should have been there at the end there, you know. Because they had that little scene where, you know, he was standing over the guy's shoulder, and they're like, yeah, she's safe, blah, 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 you know, here where she is. And he's like, oh, thanks. And that was the only thing they mentioned of her right there. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, he could have given her a phone call at least. I mean,
does he know what a phone is?
I'm just
picking up an iPhone.
You know, Coleman could have helped him out right there. Coulson could have helped him out right there.
Son of Cole.
Son of Cole, yeah, he could have helped him.
Oh, jeez.
He only cared about Captain America getting him the core signed.
That's right.
So, Shield TV program, Segway, Coleman, Coulson. I can say Colbert. Colson.
Shut up.
Colson's going to be in the S.H.I.E.L.D. program, the TV program, so what's about that?
Collier.
Collianson.
All right,
see, the problem is, I got Gina Louise Coleman on the mind from Doctor Who, you know, I can't help it.
What do you have Doctor Who on your mind? What kind of sick person are you?
Okay, my first question is, why are the blades different? Oh god, no, forget about it, I'm not even gonna ask.
Alright, moving on to news.
I'm sorry.
Alright, we have a few news stories.
Cody just posted a story on Comic Book Therapy. Go and watch it. And look at the blades on Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
Cody posted
stories
while he records.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know he does. You know he's going to do that. Oh, God, what is wrong with those blades?
They're different, aren't they? They're different.
They are totally different.
They look round.
Skinny.
And
yeah, they do look
tiny.
Round.
Yeah,
could
tiny.
Be worse than what they were in Origins, could they?
Oh, it's just.
Well, if you do it that way, you got to be consistent and do it that way. Crappy. You can't do it like Dan.
If you're doing it crappy, keep them crappy.
Yeah, keep it crappy. Don't try to improve and make them all round.
Don't make another kind of crappy.
Superman suit's really shiny. It's really metallic looking in that picture.
Yes, it is.
Of course I post and talk on the podcast. Don't run to my corner of a media and empire by just sitting around yucking it up with you guys.
Oh,
yeah.
Burn. Snap, baby, snap.
It's time for your newscast. Delivered directly into your ears. Brought to you by, well, a bunch of people.
All right, moving into news. We have a few stories tonight. I want to start with Sin City 2, A Dame to Kill For casting. Josh Brolin's taking over Dwight from Clive Owen. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in another movie again, playing a new character, Johnny. Chris Maloney plays someone.
A cop.
He always plays cop, you're right.
They said it's a cop, that's what they said.
They
said he was a gambler.
A gambler cop.
He can make those.
Oh.
No, we can't.
He owes debts, so he's got to go kill for him. Dirty cop.
Dirty cop.
It's a Frank Miller movie. Everybody's messed up cops.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of this movie? I was just thinking, I mean, there's a lot of recasting. I mean, I understand that Josh Brolin is Dwight since he has facial surgery at the end of this movie. But, you know, Jamie Chung's taken over the character of Miho. Apparently the original actress doesn't even act anymore. Of course.
Yeah, I think that's for the better, though, because I didn't
like that. Did she act before?
Oh, burn, baby.
Boom.
Sorry, Devin Aoki, if you're listening, I apologize.
Too late now.
That escalated quickly.
Anyway.
I don't quite know what I think of this movie. Apparently, Frank Miller's writing a lot of new stuff for it. And, you know, whether or not he's still a great writer is up for debate.
We'll find out,
then,
I guess.
Then, you know, like a lot of there's a lot of returning cast coming back. You know, Bruce Willis, Mickey Rourke, all them. But, obviously, Michael Clark Duncan, this character is being recast. What's her name? The waitress. Her character's being recast again. This movie's kind of been cursed with death, but I guess if you wait 7 years between movies, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
This movie's like Justice League. I believe it's made when I'm sitting in a theater and the credits are running.
Yeah. Even then, you're like expecting your own candid camera or some crap.
Where's the cameras?
Psych!
I was surprised to see who's playing Manute this time around for Michael Clark Duncan. The name is Dennis Haysbert. He's the Allstate guy.
Are you in good hands?
Are you in good hands? That was, yeah.
I like that guy. He was great in, remember him in, Major League? Charlie Sheen?
Oh, he's a great actor, but this doesn't seem
I'm
to
surprised they didn't go after
thing as Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh,
they didn't go after Bing Rames, actually.
All he does is he does the insurance commercials. And yeah. he played president on, 24.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, he's fine. I just don't think his voice... It's like the same, but yeah, I think he'll be all right. It's whatever.
He's small and he seems quite a bit older, and the voice is about the only thing that could probably work.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like 300. I don't care about that one. I don't care about this one really.
It's, you know, I'd really like to see him poke someone with his hands the way Minute does. He's always talking about killing people with his hands. If he just turned to the camera, said, "Are you in good hands?" and winked, I would sell Cody's life for that.
Jump a bitch after that.
All right, in other news, unfortunately, we just found out that they're going to make a new trilogy for Transformers, not just a fourth movie. Michael Bay is going to direct. Is that right?
He's directing the first one, the fourth film. He hasn't said if he's directing the other two. We can pray that he doesn't.
Yeah, I was...
I don't know.
Yeah, at least it'll be consistent.
Consistency with the shit.
Exactly. Thick and steamy.
And full of humans and not robots.
Yep. Too much love.
I'd be much more excited if they got anyone besides Michael Bay. Do something different. My God.
All they need to do is throw Brett Ratner in there. You know, he'll do
it. Oh, Lord.
Well, I wish they would, because he'd only stay on it for about a month, and then they'd get another director in.
Oh, man. You know...
Stuart Townsend of directors.
Oh, wait. He committed to X-Men, dude, so... In the worst way possible. So, you know, he'll do the same thing with Wahlberg and Transformers 4 or whatever they're going to do with it. Episode 4.
Bringing Shia LaBeouf just to kill him.
I mean, I might watch it if they do that. He gets, maybe like, crushed, too. Finally. You know, after all this time, he's not crushed. It, you know, something's wrong there. No humans were harmed in the making of this film at all.
Ever.
I don't hate that LaBeouf kid, but I'm really psyched to never hear him yell Optimus again at the top of his lungs. Optimus!
Bumblebee! Bee! I think he just says B, I don't know.
Yeah, he just says B.
Where's my car, man? Where's my car? He's all saving the galaxy, but I'd rather have my car here.
Where's my car?
A crappy car, can't afford a better car than this. It's terrible.
Sam,
terrible.
Twiggy, we need your help in our intergalactic war.
Also, yeah. It just keeps on, shit keeps on happening in the Witwicky family.
You're reading in the podcast? My God.
Oh, yeah. I'm reading Cody's articles that he posts. I mean, yeah, exactly.
I'm glad we're all committed tonight.
Hey, this can be cut out. It's fine. Just cut out fish sticks. Fish sticks.
All right, Godzilla. Josh, you had something to say about that? I mean, X, not Josh.
Hell,
X, I hate it. I hate it.
Changed my name. Godzilla. I'm not a big fan of the character, but there was just a lot of news this week as far as casting. Today they announced that Aaron Johnson of Kick-Ass likely get the lead, which they say is, as the script stands right now, the lead character of the soldier will kind of be the focus of the film, not Godzilla, which is kind of dumb.
Are you kidding me?
Like Transformers again. But Frank Darabont, who, you know, from Walking Dead, is actually doing a rewrite of the script, so there's a possibility that could change, hopefully.
And there's supposedly three monsters, is that correct?
Yeah, you have Godzilla and two more. So
you know, one of the monsters better be Godzuki.
I was hoping for Mothra.
Yeah, Godzuki and Mothra. That's the two other monsters. That's an exclusive.
exclusive. Right there. Really bad. They had two producers that walked off. I don't know. I haven't read much on that. But, you know, just a lot going on. Still about a year away before it releases, so we'll see what happens.
They're really going to focus on another person again?
Yeah. That's why.
Transformers, Godzilla, they should just make these movies like a half hour and just
have
the fighting.
They have to make the characters relatable to the viewers. So they have to have some human interaction in there.
Well, that's fine, but I don't want to see a guy running around the streets like they did in Transformers. I want to see Godzilla breaking
kill
shit.
People.
Yeah, I bet they're going to do that. Just having
I would see a half hour Godzilla movie that just had monsters fighting. I don't know about you guys.
I don't think I've ever sat through a whole Godzilla movie. And I just want to see him kill a bunch of people and knock some buildings down. I'm fine. That's Godzilla.
Yeah.
With new CGI.
In the Rampage movie that's coming out.
Yeah. Is that coming out, a Rampage movie?
Yeah, they are doing that.
Oh, that's cool. I'd rather see that than Godzilla then.
And
then we can
No one younger than us is gonna know what the hell that's
Rampage.
Yeah, we get to see people turn into giant monsters then. Cool.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. The Wolverine director says he set the Wolverine after X3 for a purpose. And I think that purpose is bullshit. What do you guys think?
I think he screwed up when he wrote it, and he was like, oh, yeah, this should have been a prequel. Too late now.
Yep. For those who haven't read that story, he claims that he said it after X3 because Wolverine was in a state where he had no ties to anyone, which, I don't know if... I actually remember seeing X3, and that was not the end of the movie. Wasn't he pretty much setting up shop as the new Cyclops or the new Professor or someone?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, in fairness, he didn't say immediately after X3.
Well.
Yeah, but then it raises the question. Something happened after he set up shop. Because he was setting up shop, there's no doubt about it. But again, if it's set after X3, obviously something happened after he set up shop. What?
Well, we know who's going to be in it.
Bullshit excuse.
We know Anna Paquin's gonna follow his ass to Japan because she can't keep her away from Wolverine. The worst rogue ever.
Snaggletooth.
Sucker.
Well, you have no one else to compare it to, so you can't say it's the worst ever.
Well, it's a fair assessment.
I'm pretty sure that's the worst they could do. The worst they could have done.
Well, Pedro brings up a good point. Do you think they're actually going to address what happens to the X-Men between these movies? I mean, could that tie into the new First Class movie?
There might be some expositional scene that he does. I don't know, a couple of lines saying, oh, I lost everything, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, like a flashback to three, some couple of scenes of them dying and shit. I don't know. Probably.
Well, that could be a factor on why he's going to Japan.
Yeah, I mean, he's using that as an excuse for him, you know, seeking refuge or solace in another country, and that he's all beaten up and emotionally torn, which you know, for Wolverine is nothing new. If he's emotionally torn and he goes to another country, yeah, they can use that as an excuse. But again, he set up shop. He was setting up things again, so, you know. What
I think you're thinking too deep into it, because really what's going to happen is he just wanted to go to Japan and get some good sake. And that'll be the reason. Because you're thinking too, like, this is Fox now. You got to remember, they're not going to go too deep on this.
Yeah, I was thinking, are they going to do a Days of Futures Past thing and set up X-Men First Class? And I'm like, the writers between those two movies probably haven't even talked to each other. They're probably not even aware that there's another X-Men movie out there. All right, that was this week's episode of the Weekly Dose. I am Sir Witty Supername, and I have no Twitter. Norwood.
I am Optimus Prime, not Norwood. He's a human.
Give him your Twitter handle, man. Screwing around.
NCREB, 1986.
That's NCREB, 1986. Cody.
You can find me at the Thorverine.
Josh X.
You can find me at Geek Boy Movie.
That is also where you can send all podcast complaints.
Yes, yes. Every single complaint you have. And naked photos.
Where can we find you, Pedro?
You can find me at WolverinePT.
And at comicbooktherapy.com.
Sometimes. Most of the times.
A lot, yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Good night, Neverland.
Five, four, three, two,
engage.
Weekly Dose. Prescribed by Comic Book Therapy.